gate. All right. Shnayim Ochsim B'Talis. So this is the sugya of Chazaka. And we have a principle which is almost the fundamental principle of all of Dini Mominus, and that runs the following. Chazaka kol ma shetachas yad adam shalohu. This is a reference to metaltolin, and when a person is in possession of metaltolin, we assume it's his. He didn't steal it. It was his. Kidas ukidin. If you want to come and claim it's yours, so let's say Shimon says to Reuven that object that you're possessing is mine, then Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya, the burden of proof is on Shimon to establish with Edim that it's his. And until he can do so, he cannot overcome and overwhelm the Chazaka of Reuven. What is the source in Shas for this principle of Hamotzi Mechavero Olvarai? Let's open up for a moment to Daf Kuf. So we're fast-forwarding by almost 100 blot for a moment, and we'll get back to Daf Beis in just a second. This is the famous Mishnah in Perek HaShoel of Hamachlif Para Bechamor. So we have a Kinyan Chalipin. The para is pregnant and she gives birth to a calf. Now the question is, at what point did that birth take place? Was it before the chalipin, before the kinyan was achieved, or afterwards? So of course the seller says that my para gave birth before the sale, and therefore it's mine, it's not included in the sale. The buyer, the lokeach, on the other hand, claims that the birth took place after the lekicha. Nobody seems to have any proof. So the Mishnah says, yachloku. Then in such a case, we try to do the best we can, tzedek tiridov, and therefore, to reduce our damages, we will divide the object in half. It means we'll sell it and divide its money. The Gemara right away asks the following, Amayach Loku, why do we divide up the value of this Vlad? Velechse Bershus Deman Kaima. Let's see where the Vlad is at this point. If the Vlad is in the Rishus of the Mocher, then the Mocher has possession over the Vlad, or the reverse. And the Gemara says, Lehevi Ida Chamotzi Michavero Olav Haraya. Basically, the Gemara is asking, where the Mishnah seems to be oblivious to ignore the most important element in the equation. Where is the Vlad? The Vlad is not floating in midair. It's got to be either in the Rishus of the Mocher or the Lokeach. And the other one, the Idoch, becomes a Motzi Mechavel of Araya. Now what I'm going to ask you later is the following question. Just keep it in abeyance. I don't want to address it now. What is the position, the location of the Vlad really do for us? Does it prove anything or not? Again, let's not answer that question now. Just put it in the back of your mind. The Mishnah is so baffling that Reb Chiya Bar Oven, in the name of Shmuel, says that the Vlad is floating in midair. What do you mean it's floating in midair? I haven't seen a Vlad that flies in the air. The answer is Bo Medes Bi Agam, that it's neither in the Rishus of the Mocher nor the Lokeach, it's in an Agam. And therefore there's no Muchzak. No one could claim that he has physical possession over the Vlad. And in such a case, in the absence of Chazaka, we're going to apply the principle of Yachloku. So again, here are the following two conclusions, the two principles that we derive from this Gemara. If one of the two litigants has Chazaka, then the other one becomes Hamotzi Mechavel of Arai. The burden of proof is on him. If, on the other hand, neither of the two have Chazaka, then we apply the principle of Yachloku. Now the reason why, or amongst the various reasons why this Gemara is very difficult, is because what happened to other dinim other principles and regulations that seem to apply to a suffix, to a case of doubt. Like, for example, we have a principle called Yehemunach HaShiyavu Elio. We have another principle which is called Kol Diolim Gavar. We don't understand at this point what are the rules and regulations, when do we apply which of the principles that govern suffix. Now, I say this in the context of Bab Metzia Daf Kuf. If we go back to Bab Metzia Daf Beis, I wouldn't make that comment. I would tell you that in all honesty, I think I understand, again, you'll prove to me that I'm wrong, but I think I understand why the Mishnah paskins yachloku, and there's no havamina to say kol yolim govar, or yehemunach hachiyov elyo. Because the Mishnah opens up with shnayim ochsim vitalis. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, ochsim vitalis, dafka ochazin, dishneyem muchzokim ba. I would underline those three words, Shneim Muchzokim Bo. Rashi says that this is not a case of the absence of Chazokah. In the absence of Chazokah, we're going to have a case of Monashlishi, where two people are mafkid in the hands of a shomer. No one is Muchzok on it. And therefore you might say, Yehi Murach. We don't know who belongs to. Let's wait till Eliyahu comes around. Or, for example, the Gemara Baba Vasa, in the case of an Arva, of a Sfina, no one is actually in control and possession of this boat, and therefore called the Olam Gavar. So basically what we're saying is the following, that we'll, you know, to open up the entire sugya of when do we say, you know, in Safek this, when do we say that, which principle governs us, that's all predicated on the absence of Chazakah. If we have a Chazakah, then clearly the Chazakah tells me that it belongs to the Muchzak. If you have two people who are Muchzak on the same talis, then what we're going to do is we're going to split the talis. We're going to give Reuven half because he's muchzak on half. We're going to give Shimon half if he's muchzak on half. Mm-hmm. If in a case, for example, that Reuven would be muchzak on 3/4 of the talis and Shimon only has 1/4 of the talis, ain't okinami. We'll say that Reuven should get 3/4 of the talis and Shimon will get 1/4. It all depends. It reflects the chazakah. So Rashi says that the Mishnah emphasizes at the get-go, Shnayim Ochazim Vitalis. Ochazim produces Yachloku. I have only one problem, and that's going to be the sugya later on. Namely, why a Shvua? The Mishnah says that Yachloku, only on condition that each one of these two litigants is willing to take a Shvua. Zei Yishov Hashem Lo Bapachos Michetzya. I don't know where the Shvuah comes in. So Gemara is going to tell us later on it's Takaras Chachamim in order to avoid situations in a Metzia where something's laying in the ground and everyone's going to pounce on it and each one is going to rip it away from his friend. So we need the Shvuah. But obviously that's a secondary halacha. Primarily the halacha would be Yachloku without a Shvuah. And the reason for that is because each one is Muchzak. And if each one is muchzak, that gives us that reflects the principle of kol mashe chazaka, kol mashe tachas yad adam shalohu, that we believe that if someone has muchzakus, then it's his. Now Rashi emphasizes a few points over here. Number one, ein lo zeh koach ba yosef mizeh. In other words, no one has more of a chazaka than the other one. As Rashi is willing to evaluate or give different grades or madregos to chazaka, it could be one person has more of a chazaka than the other. And that's again a sugya later on called karkashta. In other words, when someone is holding on to the fringes and one of them is holding on to the guf hatalis. Then Rashi makes another point. Rashi says that we shouldn't forget the Gemara on Daf Kuf of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. And therefore, Rashi says, Ilu Hoysa Biad Echad Levado, if one of the two litigants had the exclusive Chazaka, Havi Idoch, the other one would be Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. And I would add a footnote here, I am Bamatziyad Af Kuf, which tells us that if, in the case of Machlev Parah B'Chamor, the Vlad was located in the Rishus of one of the two, Lomazogin, it's in the Rishus of the Mocher, then the Lokeach would be the Motzi, and he has to bring the Raya. The same thing would happen here. If Shimon were to say to Ruve, well, you grabbed away the talis from me, we don't believe Shimon. Shimon would have to substantiate that argument with a testimony of two Edim. And the reason for that is because Reuven can activate on his own behalf the principle of Kol Mashitachas Yad Adam Shalohu, insofar as he's exclusively the Muchzah. But our Mishnah is talking about a case where both Reuven and Shimon are equally Muchzakim. And finally, Rashi makes one last point. What does it mean? Amotzi mechavero all of haraya with a hey ayidia. What raya will qualify to be motzi mama on mershus hamuchzak? Rashi says be edim. He's going to have two edim. Now, again, in order to appreciate what these edim are testifying, we'd have to learn the second perek of Bamitzia, and that's the perek of simanim. Meaning, I look at something and I say, well, that belongs to Reuven. How do I know that that's the object? I mean, today you have manufactured objects, you can't tell the difference between one and the other. Right? You go into a store today, they'll give you a million, of the same item. But let's say there's a simon, and the Adam can recognize the object. Another possibility would be, maybe Rashi means the Adam, that in the case of Machlev, Par, B'chamar, they were there at the time of the chilufin of the chalipin, and they can testify that the par had not yet given birth, already had given birth. A third possibility of Edim would be gzela, that the Edim saw Shimon grab it from Reuven, or the other way around. But in any event, in metaltal, in the concept of Edim, is a little bit iffy. How do the Edim exactly testify that this object belongs to Reuven or to Shimon? But there are solutions to the problem. And then Rashi says the following. The Eino Nemon Zelito Bishvua. There's a Havamin in Rashi. It's a pretty mind-boggling Havamin. You know, Rashi's when he... You always have to ask yourself the question, who are the students of Rashi in the class that Rashi has to explicate something? Are they idiots? Are they first graders? You know, they don't know anything. So Rashi's telling us, don't think that Shimon, if he's not Muchzak, because Reuven has exclusive Chazaka, can prove his point and adduce evidence by the fact that he takes a Shvuah. Now, if you would have asked me, I never would have had a Hamam, you know. If Rashi would have excluded, let's say, Eid Echad, and Eid Echad is only Mechayv Shvuah, Eid Echad is not Nemed L'Mamon, I would understand this Rashi. But Rashi's excluding a Hamam, you know, that Shimon could win this case with a Shvuah.
Just out of the blue.
Take a shvuah and I swear that it's mine and you stole it from me. If you imagine the repercussions of the Havamin. Anytime I want to take your diamond ring away from you and it's worth billions, all I have to do is take a shvuah in this Havamin. Or maybe Rashi means that only in this case, because the Shnayim Ochzin and will split it, maybe the shvuah will give rights to get half of the object. But still, I mean, if I claim in business that you grabbed onto my diamond ring, and I'll take a shvuah to that effect. I mean, I can get half of a diamond ring. That's not a bad deal for one shvuah, you know.
But since they're both muchzak, it's impossible to have each one take a shvuah because they would contradict each other.
Well, so that's going to be the Mishnah. Yeah, we're not up to the Mishnah yet. Exactly how each shvuah can be reconciled with the other shvuah. He's not going to take a shvuah that the entire talis is one. But again, Rashi wants to know what would have been the deal if there was only one muchzak. So Rashi answers that in such a case, Edoch, the other guy, is Hamotzi Mechavel Araya Be'edim. So Rashi says, and don't even dream that he, in the absence of Araya, could take a Shmuel. Again, he's not Muchzik at all. And yet Rashi seems to entertain the Havamina that he could take a Shmuel. That's a Pella of a Rashi. I have a feeling that Rashi can only be understood when we get to the Sugya of Shmuel. Because the power of the Shmuel here has something to do with the fact that we're dealing with a Metziah. And this whole entity of a shvuah has a special power in the context of a metziah. Now, the first Tosfos in this Masechta I'm going to leave out for the time being. He's hung up on technicalities. They're very interesting technicalities. But he wants to know, in Rebbe Seder HaMishnayis, why did he place this Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Bava Metziah? What connection does it have to the last Mishnah in Bava Kama? And Tosfos does this brilliant analysis that there is a connection to the end of Bava Kama. There are two people claiming ownership on the same object. That's called Nisores, you know, when you hire a carpenter, and as a result, of his carpentry. You know, we supply him, the Baal Bai supplies him with Eitzim, and he cuts through the Eitzim and it's Nesoris, you know, sawdust. And it's worth something on the market. And the question is, who owns it? You know, is it, does it accrue to the carpenter, the Nagar, because he created it, or does it accrue to the Baal Habayis because it came from his raw material, and so forth and so on? So Tosfos says that leads us to the Mishnah of Shnayim Ochsin B'Tal. Then Tosfos goes into a long, long discussion here about Ein Seder LeMishnah, a certain principle about Seder Mishnayis. And the question is there a Seder within a Masechta? Is there a Seder in two different Masechtas? And then Tosfos questions whether Nezikin is all one Masechta and the three Bavas are really one Masechta. Or do we assume that every Masechta is separate and therefore there's no Seder? I mean, this is the subject of this Tosfos, if you'd like. If we decide, if the chips fall above Metzia, we could decide to go through that Tosfos B'Iv. What I'm more interested in is the second Tosfos V'Achlok. Tema. Maishno mahi di arva di omer kol di olam govar b'perek cheskes abatim. Rav Osai, we're very smart. We're not bothered by the Kasha Tosfos. Rashi has already answered the Kasha Tosfos. Because Rashi tells us that the reason for Yachloku is because of Ochazin. Each one, respectively, is a Muchzak. And we apply the principle of Chazok Kol Mashtachas Yodam Shalom. And therefore, Reuven deserves half the talis and Shimon the other half. That has nothing to do with Kol the Olam Gomer. Kol the Olam Gomer is in a case in the absence of Muchzak. See, if Tosfos would have asked the Kasha, he should have asked the following Kasha. The Gemara on Daf Kuf tells us then in the case of Omeris Ba'agam, and neither the Mocher nor the Lokeach have a Chazaka, we're going to split the Vlad. Well, why split the Vlad? Why not apply the principle of Kol Yom Gomer? That's an intelligent question. I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe you gentlemen do know the answer. I don't know the answer to that question. But if Tosfos is asking from our Mishnah to the case of Kol Yom Gomer, that's upgrade. I don't need Tosfos to answer that question. The answer is already written in Rashi, and it's really written in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says Ochazin. And the purpose and the emphasis of the word Ochazin is on Muchzakus. Now again, there are two levels here. There's Ochazin as a Mitzius, you know, just describing the reality. He's holding on to the talis. But on a legal level, in terms of the Halacha, Ochazin is a Chazaka. Now, theoretically, you might have a case of Ochazin without a Chazaka, you know, without proving anything. Like, for example, you remember I mentioned to you that there's a case of Manashlishi. So in Manashlishi, if the Shomer, again, that's going to be a sugya, it's not for now, but if the Shomer is considered as if he's holding on to it on behalf of the Mafkid, well, in this case, there were two mafkidim, and the Gemara says they gave it in one bundle, so the shomer might be a muchzak on behalf of both of them, but yet we know one of them gave one mana, the other gave two manos, so when you get to the third mana, you cannot apply the principle of tfisa of ochazin as a clarification al pidin of who it belongs to, you know, to say, well, let's split the third mana because each one of the two mafkidim is considered muchzak vicariously through the chazak of the shomer on that third mana. I mean, in the case of Shnayim Ochsin B'Talis, there's a logical reason to say that each one, Reuven and Shimon, respect are muchzakim because the talis was hefker; they each grabbed on to half the talis simultaneously. Hence, each one has a chazak kol mashtach siyodom shalom. I wouldn't say that in the case of Manashlishi. So you may come to conclusion that you can have a tfis on something, but it doesn't prove a thing. I'll give you another example. We're going to have a sugya called Tukfa Kohen. So we don't know if this is a Bechor or not. So the Kohen grabbed onto it. So the Gemara says the Yisrael is now a Motzi Mechabel of Araya. Well, what do you prove from the fact that the Kohen is holding on to it? Well, let's even before the Kohen grabs onto it. Okay, that might be a different kind of Chazaka, but in terms of a Chazaka of Tfisa, of Ochazin, in the case of a Safek Bechor, the Ochazin proves absolutely nothing. And there you can ask the question, why would Tfisa and Ochazin generate a Halacha of Hamotzi Mechavel Varaya? in the absence of chazaka, kol masha tachas yadim shalohu. And this is basically a sugya in Chazaka Sabbat called godros. So for example, you have animals. So the animal roamed into my rishus. The Gemara says, ain't lem chazaka. You know, even though godros is metaltalin, and metaltalin lends itself to tfisa, so he's holding on to the godros, he locks the pen, you know, he closes the gate, that doesn't prove a thing. Is Elam Chazaka. So if that be the case, what do we do to talk for Cohen? And truth be told, in the case of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, where we have Chazaka called Mashitachas Yodim Shalohi, the law of Yachloku is not really a new, it's not really a new entity called Yachloku. I mean, basically what we're doing is, you know, we're taking the two Chazakas and we're translating them into real terms. You know, each one has a chazok on half the talis. Hence, each one is holding on to that which is his. And the fact that he's grabbing on to the talis is very meaningful and very significant. He didn't grab it out of the hands of Shimon or vice versa, like in the case of Tokfer Cohen. In any event, take a look at Tosis's language. I don't know, he goes pretty far here. V'yesh lomar, the ochas in shiny, the choshiv ki'ilu kol echad yeshlo ba bivadai chetzi. Tosis adds the word bivadai. So this is a very fascinating issue in chazokas. Does chazoka create a vadai, or does chazoka create a achras asafek? Meaning, even in the case of chazoka, we're still within the realm of sfekas. Or no, shall we say that chazoka is so powerful that it prevents the latest asafek? I mean, the language of Tosis, again, if I want to take it literally at least, is bevadai, that is, as far as each chetzi respectively is concerned, he has a vadai that it's his. This is not a chazok of suffering. So, for example, in the case of Tokfer Cohen, no one under the face of the earth can say that that's a chazok of vadai. Even if the Yisrael is holding on to the Bukhar, the suffering Bukhar, that doesn't prove a thing. You know, it all depends on whether the first leader was a viable being, and therefore this one is not a petarechem, and so forth and so on. The fact that he's holding on to the Bukhar proves absolutely nothing. So that for sure is dine sfeikis. But Tosis says in our Mishnah, because we're applying the principle chazaka shekol machshasi d'shlo, that creates a vadai. So for example, if you would talk about chaluka, yachloku, is it chaluka's vadai or chaluka's safek? The answer is going to depend. In the case of chaluka of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, Tosis insists that's a chaluka's vadai. But if, let's say, for example, in the case of Bechor, Sufik Bechor, two of them, the Yisrael and the Kohen, would grab onto it simultaneously, that would be a chaluka of Sufik. That would not be a chaluka of vadai. The fact that he grabbed onto it proves absolutely nothing. And I want to point out that Tosis is so convinced that this is a vadai. Look at the next line in Tosis. He says, "Danan sahadi, the mighty tough is high di dehu." Let's add a few words to Tosis. The mighty tough is high di dehu. The language of Anan sahadi is certainly a language of vadai. You know, I that was a double entendre, right? It's certainly the language of a vadai. So if you have any doubts about whether Tosis, when he said Bivare Shalom on Chetzi, he meant it literally, you know, take me at face value or not, is this some sort of hyperbole or flowery language? No. Anan Sahadi. Anan Sahadi means a vada. See, Rashi says Dafka Ochazin. But Rashi doesn't spell out that it's an Anan Sahadi. And I'm wondering whether Tosis takes this a little bit further than Rashi. You know, Rashi, no doubt, is aware of the fact that Tfisa and Ochazin is a pretty strong raya, but I'm not sure, again, in the nuance of the language, whether Rashi would go as far as to call it an ansadi and a vadai. And I'll tell you why. I think Rashi might be a little bit inhibited about using the term Anan Sadi. Because what does the Mishnah require here in addition to Yachloku? A Shmuel. It's very could you imagine the following? If two witnesses would testify that Reuven and Shimon grabbed onto this towel simultaneously, would you need a Shmuel in that case? Maybe yes, maybe no. I would say no, because in that case you have two Eidim. So if Tosis is to be taken at face value on Ansadi, then why is Shvua? Rashi, I think, has, you know, felt, he ended shy of this last phrase of an Ansadi. You know, again, it's Dini Chazok, and it's certainly a Chazok that convinces us that his claim is an honest to goodness claim. But to say it's an Ansadi as if two witnesses were there, that confuses me, because I don't know how you can impose a Shvua on top of a claim that's supported by an Ansadi.
But that means to say that if you're saying if this is that when you say it's a chazaka, one person has it, that the chazaka is that it really is. That means that he can destroy it.
No, for sure he can destroy it. It's his,
and then you can find out later on that it was not him.
That he stole it. You mean if we have Aiden, that he stole it?
So he found it.
No, I'm saying he destroyed his head.
No,
but now we find out
the
one.
Yeah, he has the whole thing now. It was Meshusa Rabin. He found it.
He found it exclusively. He found it alone. It was no one else.
But somebody comes along and says, "No, that was mine. I lost it here." He has no raya, so he can't be motzi from the first one. Is that one? Is the Torah saying is bavada? It's his.
Yeah, I think so. That's what Tosfos saying. Anansadi.
The other one can't.
Imagine Tosfos applies anansadi even in the case of shnayim moksim b'talis. How much more so if there's only one person holding on to the talis? And if Shimon now comes along and he says it's mine, he has no proof to that claim, and then he grabs it from Reuven, he's a gazlan. That's not talk for Cohen. Talk for Cohen is a case of what we call drawer de mamona, right, which means even below Tanasem Yesh Safek. There's an objective Safek. In the case of an objective Safek, then we're not talking about Gzela. But in a case where there is no objective Safek, like in our case, which is less late drawer de mamona, there's no drawer de mamona, then in such a case, once a person establishes his ownership based on Muksakas, then the laws of Gzela come in. And if somebody grabs it out of his hand, we see him as a goslin. It's not like he's a suffering goslin. We could have an anansadi. So let's say, for example, in this case, if in front of Bezdin, I'm just dramatizing, Shimon would grab the entire talis, meaning the other half of the talis that he's not holding on to, out of the hands of Rumi. That would be an act of Gzela. Right. Not so in the case of Tokfa Kohen. We're not going to accuse the Kohen of Gzela. We don't know what the story with this Bechor is, who it belongs to. And that's called the Safek of Dror de Mamona. Are you familiar with Dror de Mamona?
Yes.
Now, let me suggest a wild idea. We said that this Shvua is a little bit odd, because once Tosfos insists that the Chazaka generates an Anansadi, why do I have to support my claim of an Anansadi of a Chazaka with a Shvua? Is it possible that the Shvua here comes under the Halacha of Moda B'Miktas? So let's just say by way of introduction, there are three Shvuas min HaTorah. There's a Shvuas Eid Echad, there's a Shvuas HaShomrim, and there's a Shvuas Moda B'Miktas. Now what happens is that, let's say Shimon, from his perspective, as we'll see in the Mishnah, he's claiming the entire talis is his. Correct? But then, we're going to say that, look, Shimon, with all due respect, Reuven's holding on to half the talis. So at that point, again, I'm just dramatizing it, Shimon backtracks and he says, okay, I have to admit on half the talis, I have no claim. Even though, again, he's claiming the whole talis.
Well, he's going to say no claim.
He's going to say it's no claim because the chazaka is like shnei eidim, right? So what happens, for example, if I claim that you owe me 100 and you deny the entire 100, and then I can bring eidim on 50, so you have to take a shvua on the other 50. That's called the shvua of Rabbi Chiya, if you've ever heard of it. Right? Of lo tehe hodas bal din gedola me'odas eidim. That just like in hodas bal din on half the time, if I admit half is yours, I have to take a shvua on the other half. How much more so if eidim testify in half, I have to take a shvua on the other half. So here, if Tosfos is applying the principle of anansadi, and he's willing to say that since Reuven is holding on to half the talis, that half is certainly his, as if two eidim testified on his behalf, then what we're left with is a motive of mikzas on the part of Shimon. Why? Because Shimon, who claims the entire talus is his, is contradicted on half the talus by two eidim, in quotation marks. I don't mean that literally, we don't have two eidim, but we have Tosfos as a non-sadri. Now, if there are two eidim that testify on half of the claim of, to support half the claim of Reuven against Shimon, in other words, if Shimon is claiming the whole talus, and now Reuven induces two eidim, i.e. the chazok on half the talus, then Shimon becomes a mode of a mix of satayin on half the talus. And again, I can say the same thing in the reverse as far as Reuven, hence we have a shmua. So that's interesting, because then the element that we're introducing into the equation is a shmua doraisa, not the shmua derabanan, you know, because people, when they see a mitzia, you know, they think, oh, what does he care? I'll just grab it out of his hands, and so forth. So we want to inhibit them from doing that. That's the Gemara later on. And we're going to institute a shvua. But it might even be a shvua doraisa. But again, this is fascinating, because what we're saying is dover vipucho. We're saying X and not X at the same time. Because on the one hand, we're saying that Shimon has an ansari on his half. On the other hand, we're saying that Shimon has to take a shvua on that half because of modu mixas. Now, a shvua in the case of modu mixas means that the Torah suspects you that you're lying in your claim, right? That's called ishtamuti kam ishtamin, right? The whole 9 yards over there, right? So how can you tell me that on the one hand Shimon is awarded half the talis based on his chazaka because Anan Sadi, and then turn around and say, well, we don't believe him and we think he's lying, and the Torah is going to say you're a modem mixas and therefore take a shvua on your half of the talis? Well, what do you mean I have to take a shvua on my half of the talis? I have an Anan Sadi to support my claim on half of the
talis. Yeah, when we say ishtamuti kam ishtamin, That's usually, that's backed up because Ein Balchov
Machish May is part of Zeichova.
Right. But this is not a case of that. This is not like you borrowed the other part from him. You're claiming that
you don't owe him anything, so there's no halachas upon him and so forth. Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, that we'll have to see. In any event, Tosfos goes on and he says the following: V'chein b'mana shlishi. The Gemara is a Havavina that we should apply the same yardstick and the ruling of Shnai Moksav Talis to the case of Mona Shlishi, and we should divvy up the Mona Shlishi half-half. So Tosfos now has to ask himself the question, well, wait a minute, if the Achloku in our Mishnah is predicated on Chazokos, right, the Ochaz in Shiny, so where's the ochas in the case of Mona Shlishi, that the Gemara wanted to make an analogy between Mona Shlishi and the case of Shnai Moksav Vitalis? So Tosfos now is going to activate the principle of Shomer. He says, V'chein b'mona shlishi, the medamim Gemara l'talis, choshiv ha'hu, sha'nifkad tofes b'cheskas shneim. The word nifkad here is a synonym for Shomer, that the Shomer is holding on to this Mona Shlishi on behalf of both Mafkidim. Ke'ilu heim atzmam muchzakim bo. This is a wild idea. There is such a thing as Yad Shomer Ki Yad Balabais, but to apply that here in this case and to assume that we have an Anansadi on behalf of both Reuven and Shimon, and the Gemara in the Ha'amina thinks therefore, if not for the takon of Ramos, the Gemara is going to say that the only reason why we're going to wait till Eliyahu HaNavi comes is because we want to discourage a Ramai, because somebody is definitely lying in this case. Einach haluka yichol yosemis and so forth. But that's a whole sugya unto itself. But primarily fundamentally in the Havavin and the Gemara thought that we should divvy up the third mana 50-50. Right, so each one of these two claimants is going to be awarded 150. So Tosfos says, what kind of yachloku is that? Neither of them are muchzakim. And again, Tosfos has already established that that's the difference between our case of Shnayim Ochs and the case of Bava Basra of Ahu Arva. That Ahu Arva called the Yom Gavar is because of the absence of chazaka. So in the case where the Shomer is holding on to this third mana, it should be identified as Ahu Arva, meaning it should be equated with the case where no one's Muchzak. So Tosfos therefore is forced into a corner and he has to be mechadish this chiddush. Nein, it's not that no one is muchzok; they're both muchzokin. We get a very odd kind of halach that two people are muchzok vicariously through the shomer. I mean, it's true that the shomer is holding on. The shomer made a mistake here. He doesn't know who gave him the mana shlishi. If he was in a half, if he had half a pea brain, he would have known who gave him the mana shlishi. You know, I would tar and feather him. You know, okay, so the Gemara is going to say it was all bound up and the whole nine yards. But in any event, to say that he's muchzak on behalf of both of them on the mana shlishi, I mean, tzarech iyun gadol. And that's the only way Tosfos can justify the Gemara's analogy between shnayim ochzim v'talis, which is based on a kind of mutual muchzakus. I mean, not mutual, but you know, respective muchzakus on half and half, and the case of mana shlishi. That mana shlishi is considered that they're both muchzak on the mana shlishi.
So we say,
and therefore, the Gemara should have said yachlok.
So we say on Ansade that ends the story right then. Is that we?
How can you say this, Alan? I mean, Tosfos says it, and I don't understand it. Maybe you understand. How can you say on Ansade? I don't understand this, Tosfos.
I mean, it seems to
I understand the Anan Sadi in the case of Talis, but how can you say Anan Sadi in the case of Mana Shlishi? You and I know that one of them, whether it's Reuven or Shimon, gave the Mana Shlishi. So what do you tell me Anan Sadi?
Well,
kind of Yachloku is that?
Go to the Lad of Shnei Mavzim and Talis and you can have the same problem. What happens is, strangely enough, that they were both holding it and it's Anan Sadi. We see that just. And then they got so involved in something that they lost it. They both lost the same talis. They lost the talis again. And now one...
But they dropped it. They both dropped it.
Yeah, they dropped it. And they know we're searching around. And they say, one guy grabs the whole thing. Now do we go back and we say, we already said Anan Sadi, that the other way owns half of it? Or is the only reason he owned half of it is because he was holding part of it and he didn't have any proof? Yeah, no proof of nothing.
Are you asking whether the Ochazin has to be continuous? Like,
that's right.
You know, at the moment that he ceases to be Ochazin, maybe he loses his Chazon.
That's what I'm asking.
Right? I don't know. It's a great question. But that's not relevant to my question. I'm asking you the following question. In Mana Shlishi, where the Gemara says that we should apply the principle of our mission of Yachloku, Tosfos says because they're both Musakim. Why? Because the Shomer is holding on to the Mana Shlishi on behalf of both. Is that a Chalukas Vaday of Anan Sadi? In our mission, it's a Chalukas Vaday. We have every reason to believe that Reuven has half the talis, Shimon owns the other half the talis, and the Chazokas prove that. So that's a Vaday, Tosfos says, on Chetzi, and hence we have an Anan Sadi.
Right.
I understand very well how the Anan Sadi operates in the case of Yachloku. But in the case of Mana Shlishi, where the Gemara thinks we should apply Yachloku, how can you possibly tell me as Anan Sadi you're involved in a contradiction in terms? Because it can't belong to both of them. We know that one gave 100, the other gave 200. Hence, Tosfos must be introducing a whole new concept of chazaka. It's not the chazaka of an ansadi, but it's the chazaka of a maisa tfisa. Remember we said that holding on to something has two dimensions to it. It's the physical dimension, and it's the halach of kol mashik yat tachas yodam shalom. And you and I would have said, off the top of our heads, that it's Amar Talia, it's a package deal. You know, Maisa Chazaka without the proof of Kol Mashik is meaningless. You know, I could have a Maisa Chazaka like in the case of the Kohen who grabs onto the Bechar, but what does that prove? It doesn't prove a thing. So Tosfos is going to tell us that there are two dinim in Chazaka. There's one din of Chazaka which is predicated on kol masha tachas yodam shalohu. If you're holding on to it, how do you get it? How did you acquire possession? The answer is because it's yours. Kidasu kidin. And there's another type of maisa chazaka, which is a technical, how should I say, chitzoni. You know, it's an external, technical, mechanical maisa chazaka. Proves nothing, but it gives you rights to the object.
Well, that's true.
And the rights are to generate a motzi mechavel of araya. So, for example, Tokfer Kohen is a motzi and also miyada. When the Yisrael is going to yell and scream, but he grabbed it from me, give it back. And no, a motzi and also miyada. Well, where's the chazok kol mashik tachas yodam shalohu? Just because the Kohen took the initiative and grabbed onto it.
Well, because it belongs to some Kohen anyway.
No, not necessarily. It's a Sofik Bechar. We don't even know if it's a Bechar. Yeah, the case of Tokfer Kohen is Sofik Bechar. We don't know the nature of the previous Leda, right? Whether it was a Vlad Kayoma, it wasn't a Vlad Kayoma, whether it's a Shilya, a Shilya below Vlad, the whole thing. Or, for example, in the case of Manish Lishi, Tosis insists that we should say Yachloku. I mean, the Gemara insists we should say Yachloku. I wouldn't blame Tosis for that. But Tosis says, because each one is Muxak on the Manish Lishi vicariously through the Tfisas HaShomer Shu Tofes Biad Shnehem. But what does that prove? Does that prove it belongs to Reuven and half it belongs to Reuven and the other half belongs to Shimon? That can't be. So there's a brand new halacha here called a Maisa Chazoka without a Rayas Chazoka. And that's the Pella. So when you talk about Yachloku, Yachloku fits into two categories. There's a Chalukas Vadai based on Emes, and there's a Chalukas Safek based on a Maisa Chazoka. Just simply a Maisa Chazoka. I don't know why in Gojos, you know, animals that roam from here, there's not even a Maisa Chazoka. I don't know how that works. I would have said that in Gojos there also is a Maisa Chazoka.
Are we saying that?
But maybe you can't have a Maisa Tfis on something that's animated, right? You know, that moves
how
around.
An inanimate object.
Right. If you have an inanimate object, you know, that's not floating around, then you grab onto it. So that gives you rights.
But then when
Cheskas Tfisa.
When they're both Tofes, so when it was Shai Ochus and Metallics, you're saying that each one of the Ochusim has to be Ochus in every part of that Talis. What if they both hold 50% of it? What each one holds is equal to the one, the part that the other one has, but there's part of the Talis that's hanging down beyond their
ring. Well, the Gemara is going to have various cases, right? There's going to be a case where this part of the talis is not being held by anyone, right, in the middle. Then the Gemara is going to have a case of Karkashta where they're holding on to the fringes of the talis, right? Our case is, in our mission, and Rashi goes out of his way to point this out, that each one is holding on to half the talis with a full-fledged chazok, every piece of half, right? So this Tosis is really a breakthrough Tosis. I'm not sure I understand how this operates, but Tosis seems to be assuming that if you're grabbing onto something, even if that holding on to something proves nothing, nevertheless it gives you rights to the object, and Amotsu Mechavel Araya, so we're going to split that third mana according to the Habmin of the Gemara. Ulekach Meshani Dosim Vadai Dechad Minu Aviyah Chaluk Yecholios Emes. So now we have another condition here. Because again, our job is to try to get the rules and regulations that govern the various possible ruling principles in the case of Safek. So the first ruling principle in the case of Safek is that if a person has a chazaka and another person has a chazaka, and we can reconcile those two chazakas in such a way that the chaluka yechol lios emes, and we believe that Reuven's chazaka proves that he owns half, and Shimon that he owns half, then the chaluka yechol lios emes, and that's called yachloku. That's going to be our paradigm case of yachloku. Then we have another case, which Gemara thought should come under yachloku, and that's the case where each one has a maisa tfisa without a rayas tfisa, and that's the case of Manish Lishi. The Gemara says, no, we cannot apply the principle of yachloku unless it's a chaluki cholios emes.
It certainly isn't.
And here it's certainly not emes. We know that one of them is a Rama. You know, he's claiming that he gave 200 when one of them actually is lying through his teeth. He gave 100. So in such a case, it's like a lot. It's like a non-involvement kind of ruling, which we call yehimunach hachiyov elio. So in the case of a Manish Lishi, you could hold on to it until, I know they put it in escrow, I don't know where they lock it up exactly, till Elio comes. And Elio, somehow with his power of Nevuah, I don't know exactly how that operates, he's going to tell us who gave the Manish Lishi. Right, he can't paskin any new halachas, I mean, because Lo B'Shamayim, you're right, ain't Novi Rashad L'Chadish Dover. But he can, with his insight, like in the case of Aveda, the Gemara says very often, Yehimunach HaTshiyov Elio, his Nevuah, he'll be able to clarify who actually lost the object.
Does Nevuah count in the case of Mammon?
You want Elof Tishma, where there's a mitzvah of listening to a Navi in Didi Mammon. So I don't know, you have to work that out. I'm sure there are plenty of articles about that. You know? But just to summarize here, it comes out that we have two rules now. We have a rule of Shneim Muchzokim, where each Chazaka proves that he owns half of it. And that's Yachloku. Then we have a Chazaka, which is only a Maisa Chazaka, both Ruvim and Shimon, but it's not a Rias Chazaka. And in such a case, we're going to apply a different principle called Eina Chaluki Cholios Emes and Yehi Munach Hachiyom Eliyom. Now, at this moment in time, I would love to ask the question of Kol Yolam Gavar. So let's see if Tosis is going to ask that question. Do you follow? Because again, we've now neutralized Halakha of Yachloku, and instead we've replaced it with Yemunach Hachiyom Eliyom. Well, in the case of Arava, at the beginning of Tosis, we replaced Yachloku with Kol Yolam Gavar. So when, again, I understand that you need two chazakas, each of which prove his ownership in order to establish yachloku. I understand, therefore, why in two scenarios you cannot apply yachloku, because the absence of chazakas. Well, at least in the case of Kol Yom Gava Hu Arva, there's the absence of chazakas. In the case of Manashlishi, we cannot say that the chazaka establishes that Kol Mashiach Takas Yolim Shalohu, because that would involve us in a contradiction, because we know that the Manashlishi belongs to one of them and not the other one, so we cannot apply the principle of Yachloku. So what happens, here's our question, what happens when you don't have the possibility of applying Yachloku? So if you're in Baba Basra, the answer is Kol Yolam Gavar. If you're in the Sugya Baba Metzia of Manashlishi, the answer is Yemunach Hachiyom Eliyom, my high. So let's hold off and see if Tosis will address this question. V'chein shnayim adukim b'shtar, this is sugya later on, the midami l'kamon l'masnisin. So you have a malvin a lover. The lover is claiming I paid you back and I was taking back my shtar. But that becomes like a receipt when the lover gets back the shtar, and now Reuven is grabbing onto the shtar
as if he hadn't been paid.
Shimon is grabbing onto half the shtar, and Reuven claims he grabbed the shtar, but he never paid me. So Gemara wants to say yachloku, meaning the lova should pay half the chov, and that is analogous to our Mishnah, says the Gemara, of shnayim oksim vitalis. But wait a minute, did he pay half the chov? Tos is going to say maybe he paid back the chov. Let's see if I read this correctly. He paid back half the chol. That's like a real kud. You know, if I have a talis and it's hefker and both grabbed it at the same time, that I understand. But to say that the lova paid back half the chol and they're fighting over the shtar,
that's sense.
A little bit far fetched. Just one second. And Why do we say that he paid back half the chov? Efsha shaparlo chetzi. Efsha, I mean, we don't know, but efsha shaparlo chetzi. And the answer is because otherwise, why are they both holding on to the shtar? We don't want to make Reuven the Malva a total liar. We don't want to make Shimon the Lova a total liar. Shimon is claiming he paid back the chov in its entirety. Reuven is claiming that Shimon didn't pay him a penny. They're both holding on to the shtar because in truth he paid half of the chov. So Reuven wants to hold on to the shtar because he wants to prove that Shimon has to pay him the other half of the chov. He hasn't yet paid it. And Shimon holds on to the chov lest Reuven will claim, if he has total singular exclusive possession of the shtar, that Shimon didn't pay him at all. So therefore it's a chaluki chol yosemis, because in fact we believe that the lova paid up half the chov, and why don't we apply that? And why don't we apply that to the case of Manashlishi? Maybe what happened was that Shimon sold something to Reuven, and Reuven said that and that's half of a mana, and Reuven said your half of mana is in the hands of the shomer.
Mamet's Lashtan with the Shomer.
Yeah, so it's again Achaluk Yecholios. Now, just like in the case of a Milveh, where you say maybe pay back half the Chov, and therefore we can apply Achaluku. In the case of Manashlishi, I can come up with a similar scenario where he paid back half the chol. I don't mean literally, but what I mean is he bought half of the mana. Let's say he sold him and he hasn't paid, whatever the case may be. So Tosus is aware of this problem and he says, Ubimana ain't derech sheyachne lo achetzi achrei shehu biyad hashomer biyad chaveru. In other words, when I give over my money to someone else, I expect to get it back. So I deposit my money in the hands of a shomer, and that's not a good situation for giving half of that money to someone else. It just doesn't make any sense. But in the case of Alva, it's very, very frequent, it's very common that a person, a lover, will pay back half the chob.
But the lover has the right to get back the shtar if he paid only half?
Getting
back the shtar means that you paid it.
He should get back half the shtar. But half the shtar is not worth very much.
He should surprise the fact that it's noted on the shtar that he paid half.
Could be.
New shtar.
Yeah, that's called a head fake. Like, you know, you add something to the shtar, and then
it makes no sense.
Then he even have to sign.
Even if he paid half.
And the same way, the other way, the same, the model of it isn't entitled to...
No, but again, are you asking why the lover grabbed the shtar?
Why could it be chalukah yocholoyot?
No, so I say, because the lover grabbed the shtar. Now, why did the lover grab the shtar? Because the lover didn't want to allow this very dangerous instrument to remain in the hands of the malva when he paid him half, because then the malva is going to claim the entire loan.
So the same...
Again, this is not a moral question. This is not an ethical question. We're not asking, did the lover do the right thing? What we're asking is it very feasible, or at least, I don't know, 50% possible, that this is what the lover was thinking? So the lover is not lying through his teeth when he says he paid back half the chob. Now, was he right and justified in grabbing onto the shtar das vesechmish? That's an excellent question. But shtar chav yotchem, my boy, the shtar in the hands of the malva is an absolute, how should I say, a clincher that the malva will be able to collect the whole chol. So if the malva is holding on to the shtar and the lover says, I paid you half, he's out to lunch. Again, it could be that in such a case the malva might have to take a shvua. You know, you have to know about shvuas nishbam and notel, but that's already on a derabana level, on a deraisa level. The Torah relies on the shtar, and the shtar testifies in the hands of the malva that the lover owes him the entire sum that's written in the shtar. The lover's in big trouble in a case of a milv shtar when he pays half the chov and leaves the shtar in the hands of the malva. So again, is the lover ethically justified in taking the shtar das vesechmish? I don't know. But it's very feasible that he would do so. And therefore the chaluk yichol liyosevis, but it's not very feasible, says Tosus, that when I have a mana in the hands of a shomer, I'm going to give half of that mana to someone, and he's right in his claim that he owns half of the mana. So the chaluk is ain't yichol liyosevis. But now I'm hoping that at this point he's going to ask our question. Let's see if I'm right. I'm fine. Avol bi'arfa. Now I'm hoping, again, what I'm about to say, I hope is right. You'll tell me if I'm right, or the next part of Tosus will tell me if I'm right. Avol bi'arfa. Tosus is asking the following: that if in the case of mana shlishi, where it's ena chaluki cholios emes, and therefore we have to suspend the principle of Yachloku. So instead, what are we going to plug in? Yei munach hachi yovelio. Why in the case of Ahu Arva are we saying call the Olam Gova? Let's see if that's what he's asking. No. He's asking a different question. He's asking, why don't we say Yachloku? Just 1 second. What is he asking? He already answered the question.
There's no Muzakut at all.
Right, so he's already said that therefore there's no yachlok. So what's he bothered by now? Just 1 second. So in the case of Arva, it's chaluk yecholios emes. Is that what he's saying? That therefore we should split the Arva, even though he's already said that in the case of Arva there's no ochazin. Avol be Arva afagav the efsha shehishol. It seems like he's reiterating what he said at the beginning. Why does he feel compelled to repeat what he said at the beginning? So what are the conditions necessary for Yachlok? There are 2 conditions now. first condition is that they're both muhzakim, and the second condition is chaluk yicholius eretz. So Tosfos just wants to point out that the reason why we mafkia yachloku in the case of manashlishi is not going to apply to the case of ahu arva, but because in the case of ahu arva chaluk yicholius eretz, but nevertheless we don't have the first condition, and the first condition is that shneim muhzakim. So you have this from both sides. So in the case of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, we have A plus B. In the case of Manashlishi, we have A minus B. And in the case of Ahu Arva, we have B minus A. So what are these two conditions, A plus B? It's Shnayim Oksim, and it's Achaluki Yecholios Emes. Those are the two conditions that have to be met in order to apply Yachlok.
And how could it be Yecholaliot Emet with the Arva?
Because they bought it b'shutfis, right? Let's say you go into a yard,
a shipyard,
right? And they're selling ships. Yeah. Or you go, I don't know if you can do it online today. Maybe in the what's that famous site where you buy things online?
eBay.
I don't know if they sell ships on eBay. Let's say it's a small ship. It's an Alta secondhand rowboat. You know what I'm saying? So we can decide that we're going to buy it together.
Yeah.
Now the rowboat is out there, you know, tied up to the dock. Neither of us have a chazaka. So Tosfos says the chaluk yicholios emes in this case, but we don't have the first condition of shnayim ochas. In the case of manashlishi, it's eina chaluk yicholios emes. We don't believe for one moment that he would have given over half of the mana while it was in the hands of the shomer. But on the other hand, it's shnayim ochas because the shomer is holding it on behalf of both of them. So we have A plus B equals Shnayim Ochsin, now a Mishnah, Yachloku. We have the case of Manashlishi, which is A without B, and we have the case of Ahu Arva, which is B without A. Is that clear? That's the best I can do. Now Tosfos said, so in Shnayim Aduka Vishtar, we have two conditions. Both are checked off. There are two Muvzakus, and the Sachaluki Cholias Emes, because maybe the love paid half the Chol.
That's true.
Then R2. So wait a minute. Now let's go back to Machlif Parah B'Chamor. Oh, so wait a minute. So what are we doing with Machlif Parah B'Chamor now? The Gemara says it's Omedes Biaga, and the Mishnah says Yachloku. So nobody's Muchsar. And also, it's not a Chaluk Yecholi Yisemes. In that case, we have no conditions met. Are you with me on this or both sides? This has to remain in Tzarech Iyun for the time being, unless you have a brilliant answer to this question, because I don't. We're missing both conditions in the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor. How can the Mishnah say, Yachloku? Ah, I know. Because the Mishnah on Daf Kuf is authored by Sumchus. Sumchus has a whole different understanding of Yachloku. Correct. Maman Amutah V'Safek Yachloku, according to Sumchus, means that whenever we have a Jor de Mamona, the Jor de Mamona forces Yachloku. So we have two categories of Yachloku. We have a Chalukas Vadai, which applies, according to Tosfos, when you have two conditions checked off. Number one, it's Shnayim Muchzokim. Number two, it's a Chaluk Yecholius Emes. That generates a Chalukas Vadai. Then we have Sumchus. Sumchus has a whole new concept of Yachloku. And that's Jorah de Mamona. Jorah de Mamona means when we know that this belongs to either Reuven or Shimon, one of the two, Machlif Parah B'Chamor, right? The part gave birth to a Vlad. It's either the Mochers or the Lokeas.
There's no way to figure
now it. Sumchus says if there's no way of clarifying that, it's going to be Yachloku. That's not a Chalukas Vadai based on Chazokas. That's a Chalukas Safek based on the absence of Chazokas. Then you have to figure out, does Sumchus apply in the case of Bari Bari or in the case of Sheva Veshema? You know, that's already a whole other sugi. You know, when does Sumchus apply? I will be arva afal gav the efsha shiya shel shneim came in the aim of zokim bo havidina de kol the olim govar. And why don't we apply the principle of yehi munach? One second. Is Tosfos willing to address that question? Let's think about that. It looks like in the case of manashlishi, right, we said that manashlishi and Ahu Arva, each are missing one of the two conditions for Yachloku. In the case of Ahu Arva, you have the condition of Achaluk Yecholius Emes, but you don't have Shnaim Oaks. In the case of Monishlish, you have Shnaim Oaks in, but you don't have Chaluk Yecholius Emes. In the case of Shnaim Oaks, of Ahu Arva, we're going to say Chol Yom Gava. In the case of Monishlish, we're going to say Yeimun. What's the Vart? Since they're both Muchzokim, so we cannot say Kol Yom Gava. Even though we know that one of them is the rightful owner, there's no possibility to say Yachloku. Nevertheless, we cannot say Kol Yom Gavar, because we know that it belongs to one of the two. Just one second. Since we know it belongs to one of the two, we cannot say Kol Yom Gavar. Is it possible that Tosis is implying here? This just occurred to me that what's the chisaron in Ahu Arva? Why don't we apply Yachloku? It's because no one's muchzor, correct? Maybe what Tosis is saying is something else. Tosis is saying that since the chaluki yechola lios emes, is therefore we don't have a right to say yeimunach. When do we have a right to say yeimunach? That's when we know that there's a liar over here. We cannot allow a situation in which the liar will benefit. But in the case where we don't know that there's a liar, because maybe these guys were partners, then we have no right to apply the principle of Manashlishi of Yeimunach. No, come on. When do we apply Yeimunach? That's only Kishach Lukei Yecholios Emes. And we cannot allow for a situation. Yeah, but one second. Kolil and Govar means he can take the whole Sfina. So Tosis is saying maybe they bought a Peshutfis. If he grabs onto the Sfina, that's not Shutfis. But why do we say Kol Yom Gavar here and there we say Yehimunach? So maybe it means that in the case where there's Chazaka, we cannot apply the din of Kol Yom Gavar. That makes more sense. So I was starting from the end, I should start from the beginning. That's really fundamentally, we should say Kol Yom Gavar whenever we don't have a right to say Yachloku. So for example, in the case of Sfina, since no one is Muchzok, we cannot apply the principle of Yachloku. We're going according to the Rabbanan of Sumchus, right? We cannot apply the principle of Yachloku, and therefore we apply the principle called the Yom Gavar. So now Tos wants to know, why don't we say the same thing in the case of Einach Haluki Cholios Emes? There too, we cannot apply the principle of Yachloku. Let's apply the principle of Kol Yom Gavar. The answer is because Shnei Muchzokim. Vicariously, right through the Shomer. So if Shnei Muchzokim, there's no way that you can say Kol Yom Gavar. Kol Yom Gavar. So it works like this. In the absence of Yachloku, what should be the ruling, the governing rule? And the answer is everything depends upon Muchzokus. If there's no Muchzokus, then we're going to apply the principle of Kol Yom Gavar. If there's Muchzokus, then we cannot apply Kol Yom Gavar, because we can't undermine a person's Muchzokus. On the other hand, we cannot apply Yachloku because Ein Achaluk Yecholios Emes. So what we're going to say is Yeimunach. See, but I'm not sure. Well, what I'm missing here is that last point. Why Yeimunach? I mean, all I'm saying is that, you know, if it can't be A and it can't be B, then it's C. But that doesn't tell me why C is the logical way of going. Now, I haven't yet given a justification or a rationalization for the Yeimunach. I mean, that has to be understood. But I'm just telling you what I think is the mechanics here. Because again, our goal for, you know, to get on board here, to get on base, is to first figure out when we apply which of these three rules. So it works like this. If we have both Muchzakus and Yecholios Emes, we can apply the rule of what? Yachlova. If we have no Muchzakus, but it's a Chaluk Yecholios Emes, then we can apply the rule of Kaldiyom Gava, because there's no Muchzakus. So we have to emphasize that over and over again. We can only say Kol Yolam Gavar if there's no Muchzakus. Because once there's Muchzakus, how can you allow for the law of the jungle? And Reuven's going to grab it out of the hands of Shimon. That we can't allow. Oh. Now we get to the case where there is Muchzakus, but there's no possibility of Chalukah. Why? Because there were two conditions in Yachloku. One was Shnei Muchzakim, and that we fulfilled in the case of Manashlishi. But the other condition was Achaluki Cholias Emes, which is impossible in the case of Manashlishi. Now we can't apply, we cannot apply neither Kol Yom Gavar nor Yachloku. We can't apply Yachloku because it's Ein Achaluki Cholias Emes. We can't apply Kol Yom Gavar because they're both Muchzakim. So we say Yei Munach. I mean, why is Yei Munach the default here? Do you follow? Just give me a minute to clarify this. If you cannot say Yachloku and you cannot say Kol Yom Gavar, then you're going to say Yei Munach. Just 1 second. I want to hear what you have to say, but I just want to get something in my own mind, if you don't mind. So what is the answer here? What is Yei Munach? Yei Munach means that, you see, what I'm going to say makes sense if there's no other fourth possibility. If I don't know, maybe there's a fourth possibility. But let's assume for the time being there's no fourth possibility. What is the nature of the third possibility? So the third possibility is Siluk Bezd. Is non-involvement. What do I mean? We have two ways of Besdin getting involved in the case of a Sofik. If neither of those two can be applied, then Besdin has to step aside.
That's called Olam Gvura.
No, so what I'm suggesting, and this is way out, I'm not expecting you to accept this. Don't think for a minute that you can accept this. What I'm suggesting is that Kol Olam Gvura is a Psak Besdin. Maybe we could use the famous principle of the Rush. You remember the Rush's principle that the guy who knows that it's his, he'll fight harder. Okay, yeah. Whatever it is, I don't know. You have to know exactly what Kol Olam Gavar is. But Kol Olam Gavar means that Bezdin's going to paskin whoever beats up the other guy and possesses the subject, it's his. But they can't do that if the Muchzak will possibly be removed from Muchzakus in the case of Anishlishi, for example. Oh, so now what does Bezdin do? They can't apply A of Yachlok, and they can't apply B of Kol Olam Gavar. So what are they going to do? Yei Munach. What's Yei Munach? We have to wait for the Novi to come and settle this dispute. But again, if you have a fourth possibility, then I'm in trouble.
One second.
Yosef will say something. Go ahead.
Isn't it so that Yossi says over there that Hakol Yei Munach, not the 100, the whole thing.
Ah, Kidei Sheyafsid Ramai.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Fine.
King Mahitzi Ramai doesn't mean that you can teach 100.
Okay, good. Yeah, but again, Yossi, there are two sugyas here that overlap. You know, and I don't think we should confuse them. One sugya is why the Manashlishi is Yei Munach. The other sugya is, well, since they're both Muchzak, respectively, on a mana, why don't we give them the mana? So that's a different sugya. That's Kideshia Yafsid Rama. It's a separate takana, which is a pell of a takana, that we steal something from you in order to make sure that the Ramai tells the truth. Again, that's a pella. You know, I don't know if we can take every, you know, this is just a first shiur. You know, you know, we have to understand in the balancing act why it's worth stealing something from someone in order to get the thief to admit the truth. That's a wild idea, and I don't know how that the mechanics of that idea. So that's already the first 200. But on the third 100, that's what we're saying, that Benson can't get involved in the third 100. I mean, Marasha, to say Achloku, they can't do it because Ein Achaluki Yecholios Emes. to say Kol Yom Gavra, they can't be doing it because maybe Reuven, who's Muchzok, is going to get beaten up by Shimon. Hence, we're going to recognize Shimon's Muchzokus, establish it as it belongs to him, and we're ripping it out of the hands of Reuven. That we can't do. So what do? We say Emunah. Now Yosef is asking, why do you say Emunah on the first two? Well, I have a more fundamental question to ask you, Yosef. How can you possibly say Emunah on the first two? You're stealing. We know that each one owns the first mana. And the answer is because we want the liar to cough up the truth. You know, he's going to have to make a chesed. Look, here are my two choices. I can admit the truth and get a mana, or I can continue being a rabbi and get nothing.
But is that...
You know what I mean? So the Gemara says we're going to use this as a ploy to get the rabbi to admit it. I mean, that's a sugya unto itself.
How is that different from Modi B'Mitzvah? That we interpret that, why are we asking him to take a shavua? Yeah. Because really, he wants to admit it, but he doesn't have the money, and he's putting it off. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea, that we're bringing in an outside factor of his state, and what he really means to say, and
hopefully he'll say the truth.
And we're hoping that when he finds out that, oh, you mean nobody's going to get anything?
Right, I'm left with nothing.
Okay, I'll back off at this time.
Yeah, I'll take the 100.
Right. 100 is more than nothing.
Right. But I mean, it's a pell of a chiddush here, because if let's say no one admits, then it turns out that you've taken a mana away from two people. Literally stolen it from them.
Right.
Again, unless you say that, you know, Yehi Munach means they really have it. Or, I don't know. You know, you have to think.
Are you talking about God?
But now the question is there a fourth? I just want to know, is there a fourth possibility? Anyway, let's see. Uwe Sumchus, Afal Gavdi Ein Muchzokim Bo, Vieira Chaluki Yecholius Emes, Echad Hika Dror De Mamona, Pish Belo Tarasei Yeshof Lebez Niach Loku. So Sumchus is blasting us with a whole new revolutionary idea of Yachloku. This is not the way we understand Yachloku. Our Yachloku is to try to negotiate between various Muchzokim. It's all based on Chazoka. Sumchus is based on the absence of Chazoka, right? That's what he says, that Afal Gav, the Ein Muchzokim Bo, you've just taken the rug and you removed it from under the feet of Yachloku. The whole of Yachloku, we said, is based on Muchzoku. That's why in the case of Kol Yom Gavra, the opening line of Tosfos, we don't apply the principle of Yachloku because they're not Muchzoku. So Sumchus is throwing a whole new monkey wrench into the. He says, you know what? Yachloku means Tzedek Tzedek Tiridof. You know, this is the best we can do. Damage control. Let's split it. It's like Shlomo HaMelech with the baby. So basically what Sumchus is saying, now you might ask the following question, you know, anyone could jump into the ring and say, well, this is mine. Can you imagine? We're trying to figure out who owns this ring.
Right.
It's a lost ring. So what we're saying is that...
I'll get half.
Wait, one second. Let me formulate the question. You'll give me the answer. But what we're saying is the following. Yachloku. Right? Yachloku. Why? Because we don't know who owns it. So the whole world is going to have to jump in and claim ownership. And they'll, you know, again, we'll have to divide up into small parts. But what do I lose by this? No. That's not Sumchus. Sumchus is Yachloku, is based on Dror de Mamon. In other words, we're excluding the entire world. It's only Reuben and Shimon. We don't know whether it belongs to Reuben or it belongs to Shimon. That's the case of Machlev Parah B'Chamor. We don't know. We don't know whether the animal gave birth before the Mecher or after the Mecher, before the Chalipin or after the Chalipin. So what do? Says Sumchus, split it. Where is the animal? It's in the Agam. There's no Muchzokus. Not only that, is the Chaluka Yecholiel Semes? Absolutely not. It's ain't a chaluk yecholio seves. Either belongs to Reuben the Mocher, belongs to Shimon the Lokech. What kind of yachloku is this? The answer is Dror de Mamona. There's a brand new category of yachloku, which Sumchus introduces. That's called Dror de Mamona. We don't know what the heck to do at this moment. No one's muchzak on the moment. Say kol di olam gofer. Ain't a chaluk yecholio seves. Say Yehimuna. Says Sumchus, then there's something called the Dror de Mamona. And Dror de Mamona means that below Tanaseim Yesh Lanu Safek LeBezdin. We know, even before any one of these litigants opens his mouth in court, that it belongs to one of the two. No one was there. You know, it's like a tree that fell in a forest, and no one was here to hear the tree fall. Here too, there was a chalipin, and no one was there to testify exactly at what point did the mother para give birth to the vlad. So what are we going to do in that case? Says Sumchus Yachloku, Tzedek Tirdof. There are two people who have an equal claim on this. No one's Muksa. We know that it doesn't belong to anyone. And yet Tzedek somehow tells me, it sounds like Ben Ptura, that we split the water in half. Yeah, don't take me literally. But let's split this in half, and then we cut our damages, right? What's it called? We cut our losses. So how do we cut our losses? Because in the worst case scenario, Shimon is going to lose half. Ruvain's going to lose half. That's better than nothing.
Who says?
That's Sumchus. Again, we have to understand how Sumchus operates. But that's called Drorah de Mamona. But Sumchus is not in a hefkervelt. He's not saying that any time that someone comes along and makes a claim, he's going to get a piece of the pie. He's talking about Drorah de Mamona, to the exclusion of the whole world. No one else has shaitas to this object.
That's because in Machlif Baruch Hamar there's no possibility of figuring it out. No, it isn't. The world has no information.
Right.
And it exists.
The suffix exists.
Right. I mean,
it's limited to two people.
Right there. And it's impossible to know who it belongs
correct.
To.
Correct. We have no way of figuring this
know.
Out.
It isn't known.
Well, maybe Eliyahu would know. You know, that could be Alpi Nevuah. No, why do I mention that? Because, you know, there is a possibility of saying Yehi Muna. But the only thing is that Sumchus claims, I don't want to say Yehi Muna.
Right.
Now, what would Sumchus say about Mona Shlishi? Let's just think for a second.
That's not a suffix.
Wait, just one second. Mona Shlishi, what would Sumchus say about Mona Shlishi? We know that it belongs. Yeah, because in the case of Muchzakus, Sumchus will admit that you can only apply Yachloku if the Chaluki Yicholi Yosefus, because that's a different type of Chaluka. So in the case of Chaluka of Muchzakus, then Sumchus will agree to the Chachamim that because of this Muchzakus, we're going to split it because the Muchzakus proves to me that our Chaluka is a Chalukas Emes. That can't apply in the case of Mona Shlishi because we know the Chaluka is not Emes by definition. So Sumchus is going to have to agree, Yehimunach Hachiyov Elio. Where does Sumchus come up with his Chiddush when there is no Muchzakus? When the Chaluka cannot be possible, but what are we going to do with it? And here he comes up with Yachloku, but a different type and a different quality of Yachloku than the Yachloku of the Chachamim. So that in the case of Muchzakus, everybody, even Sumchus, would agree that there's no possibility of what? Of Yachloku, because that would violate the Emes, and they're both Muchzakim. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do in that case? So why couldn't Sumchus tolerate Yachloku in that case? I mean, it shouldn't be worse than a Chalukah Safek of Drorah de Mamona, right? In a case where we don't know, let's cut damages to people. Ah, that's because of the Tainos. See, that's the thing. Drorah de Mamona, according to Sumchus, is a positive force over here that generates Yachloku. The Drorah de Mamona itself gives the right to both of them. But in the case of Mona Shlishi, there is no Drorah de Mamona. It's the suffix in Besdin is only because each one of these fellows is claiming that he owns the Mona Shlishi. But if we have objective suffix where even without their claim in Besdin, we're not believing them, we're looking at the Metzius objectively, and we're saying there's a suffix embedded in the Metzius, that's when Sumchus comes up with this new category of Yachloka that's not based neither on Muchzakus nor on Achaluki Yecholios Emes, but simply based on Drorah de Mamona.
And the only Drorah de Mamona that we've seen here is the Machlif Parah v'Chamor.
Well, then you have the case of Mazik. So where is that? Shoshanogas Apara, that's the beginning. Oh, that's in Bava Kama. Does anybody have a Bava Kama here?
No.
Can I trouble you for a Bava Kama?
Yes.
I'm glad you asked that question because I'd love to see if the Sugi Bava Kama is a mirror image of what we've seen here. But again, what about Shema v'Shema and Bari v'Bari? Let's just see quickly. You have the Gemara Daf Kuf. What does Gemara say here? Omani Sumcha. See the other moment. Hamutal v'Safik Cholkim below Shmua. Amar the other Sumcha v'Shema v'Shema. V'Bari v'Bari mi Omar.
Here it's a little heavy.
So why does Gemara think that Sumchus would raise his hands and admit defeat in the case of Bari v'Bari? Why is it less of a drawer to Mamon in the case of Bari v'Bari? I mean, there's an objective suffix, the fact that each one claims he knows. Why would that undermine the principle of Sumchus? That I don't follow. I mean, at the end of the day, the Gemara is going to say that Sumchus applies even in the case of Bari v'Bari.
Where is that?
That's on Daf Kuf.
But saying what?
You don't have Daf Kuf.
Right.
All right. Let me just see. Sumchus. Shor Shanogach. Just one second. Where am I? Oh, Shor Shanogach is a part. It's the two Shoshanagas, it's the two different brachim. So this is the fifth parak of Bava Kamma. V'nimtza ubra b'tzida. So there's a dead Vlad. And the question is, eina yadua im ad shelo nogcha yolda. So the calf died a natural death. Or im misha nogcha yolda, meaning the negita itself.
The negita.
Right. Is Mishalim Chatzi Nezek. So he pays half. Om Rabbi Yudah Meshmul Zu Divrei Sumchus Di Omar Momen Avutal B'Sofek Cholkin. Just one second. Before we get to Chachamim, let's just try to understand Sumchus. So this has got to be a case of Drorah de Mamona, right? Because we find a dead fetus. We don't know what killed the fetus. Was it natural causes or was it the negicha?
There's no evidence available.
Correct.
It's not
so. It's exactly like the case of Machlu Bar
B'Chamar. Exactly.
It's a tree that fell in the forest. Now let's try to introduce Chachamim into the equation. Chachamim don't recognize Chaluka as a suffix. Chaluka only applies to Muchzachus. So what do we do in this case? So obviously the Nizak is going to have to prove that he was a victim of this Negicha. You with me on that? So that's what the Gemara is going to say here. Haval Chachomim Omrim Zekal Gol Bidin Hamotzim Chavel Varaya. Now here's an interesting question which we didn't even touch on today. This is for another sugya. Does Hamotzi B'Chaver Lov Raya apply even if the Nitba is Bar is Shema? What if the Nitba himself doesn't know? So the Motzi, the Tovea, he says, I'm Bari, I know exactly what happened over here. I was there at the scene of the crime and I know that your shark killed my fetus. And the Nitba doesn't know beans about it. So that's going to be another sugya, Bari B'Shema.
Yeah, but that's the clear passing that
with it. I don't know. I mean, again, that's Rav Huda and Rav Chizda. I don't remember all the details. But yeah, we're familiar with Bari V'Shem, a lot of Bari on the phone. But it could be that Bari V'Shem, Bari, at least in a Jordan to Mamonis, is ready to be Bari V'Shem and Bari Yadav. So therefore, when the Mishnah here at the beginning of Shoshanoka Sapar establishes Yachloku, and the Gemara attributes that to Sumchus, then clearly, according to the Chachamim, the Nizak is the Motzi, and he's out. He doesn't have any proof that the Negicha took place before the Leda, and it killed the fetus. But what would be, in that very case, well, and I can apply this to Machlu Par B'Chamar as well, where the one of the Malei Dinim, let's call him the Nizak, he's Bari, and the Mazik is Shema. So the Nizek says, I was there at the scene of the crime and I know that your shark killed my... So that's already the Sugi Bari B'Shema. So that's what we have over here. So I think we made some good progress today on Yachloku. Now we have to decide what we're learning, you know, because we have three samples. But wait a minute, I can't convince you that we should be learning Sanhedrin because you never heard Sanhedrin, did you?
No.
No, because we did the Chasam Sofer was on Ksubis, Perek Shlishi, and today we discussed Tosas Shita.
And the
first day we discussed Sfir Sofer. I mean, I hope you didn't lose anything by our discussion about Sfir Sofer.
Sfir Sofer, yeah.
And you didn't become a Tzduki or anything, did you?
But I love that piece. That was a very nice piece. I already sent it over to 3-4 people already.
What, the piece from Tuesday?
From the Sfir Sofer.
I mean, the connection between Pesach and Sukkot. So why it says Mimokasab Hashavos?
Yeah, right.
All right, that's good. But what do we do about Sanhedrin here? Because I want you to appreciate Sanhedrin. But the only thing is, I need a crutch for Sanhedrin. We don't find neither notes on Sanhedrin. I know there are notes on Sanhedrin because I have page 36. So where's page 1 to 35? I don't know who to turn to.
Time for us to make history.
Somebody said that Reuven Grudner maybe had notes. Do you know who Reuven is? You know? He lives, I think, in Malit, in maybe Mitzvah Yerichov. Oh, Kfar Adumim. Oh, you told me, John, that we should ask him. Who else would have notes? Alan Dubin has notes, but I don't know. I asked Alan, and he never finds any notes for me. I don't know why.
Because he knows everything by heart.
No. That's not what he's claiming. He's just claiming that his notes are not organized.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do about Sanhedrin. We didn't find a Gemara Yitzchak.
We have. Maybe
50 pages. Oh, so we do have a Gemara Yitzchak on Sanhedrin. Oh, so that then we have to have a shiur on Sanhedrin.
That's good.
And then we can make a decision. Because I want it to be a package decision for my 8:30 class and for the 11:45, because I can't split myself. It's just impossible.
When your 8:30 class is which day?
Every day of the week, Sunday through Thursday. I don't give it on Friday.
8:30
a.m.
Yeah.
You're not available at that time. But that's when I try to break ground in the sugya. I move at a much faster pace, you know, than what we.
That's
like
learning.
Yeah, in Pesachim, I mean, we covered up till Lamed Vav, I think, in 8:30. So I don't remember exactly how far, but we got. So I want it to be both, because, you know, this is a process in which I am able to, you know, prepare on one level and then move it on to a deeper level. So that's why I'd like Sanhedrin to be. You know what, I'm a masochist. I really begin to think I'm a masochist. Why would I want to learn Sanhedrin? I never learned it in my life. I'll tell you why, because I want a challenge in life. I want to create new brain pathways,
you're
right?
You're looking to learn it anyway. Who says either you?
Why? Am I more looking to learn Sanhedrin than something that I already learned?
But there's somebody,
I mean, it's a din of Chazara, though. I mean,
yeah,
Rav Cook, you know, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, says that if you open up any daf in Shas, you'll see that Rashi and Tosa have four lines on the top. You right? So he says that's a remnant that you have to chazer four times. So how many mesechtas that I learned in my life, or how many prokim that I learned, like did I Makayim and Tzivui of Rav Kook, and I learned it four times? The answer is zippo, not one. Makis, I think I learned three times. Don't test me on Makis, because I'll end up getting Makis, you know. So there's no, I don't know if there's a more of a chiv to learn Sanhedrin than there is anything else that I learned. Truth is, the third parak of Ksubas I never learned. I mean, I learned it to flip the pages, you know, when I was 18 years old. That's it.
Actually, I found
it. But Metziah is very challenging. You know, the trouble with Metziah said you have to know everything to know anything. So I don't know. So if it's okay with the oil, maybe on Sunday we'll try Gevurah Yitzchak on Sanhedrin and see how it goes. Yeah? Are you open to that? I mean, there are a number of people who are willing to murder me already because they want to know the final answer. You know, I'm driving them absolutely nuts.
You said Sunday.
I meant Sunday. Is this year on Sunday? What's going on in Sunday? Yom Yerushalayim?
Sunday's a tougher day.
Ah, you mean you guys can't make it on Sunday? Ah. So what do I do now? I postpone it another day. Oh, that's not good. All right, Rabosa, we'll somehow, as the Brits say, we'll sort this all out. Yeah.